you know, so like
we came in for one thing and one thing only. And we're fresh out of bubble gum or whatever. I don't know if I fucked that lineup, but whatever.
I don't care. It's fine. I love you. I love bubble gum. I love movies.
I love you too. I love They Live.
That's a good movie.
So what I think I'm gonna do is I'm gonna like pre-record like the opening where it's gonna say like, inspired by Sight and Sound and IMDb, two guys set out to do the top 250 list. I'm gonna put that like pre-recorded on each episode.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right, so we are back with episode 5 of the miniseries, the top 250. Joining me again is Tom. So thanks for being here again. And we have quite the list going. Today we're starting with 150, correct?
Yep. And then we're going to go to 126.
150 to 126. Okay.
At least that's what I have in my box. So
I can't remember who went first last time.
I think I went first last time. So you want to go
first? All right. I will go.
Yeah.
My 150.
Do it.
Is a music film. Do it. Yeah, music film. Crazy Heart, starring Jeff Bridges. Jeff Bridges finally got his best Oscar for this. He plays all the songs, a lot of original music. Singing, he plays an alcoholic country singer. And Maggie Gyllenhaal plays the love interest. Pretty good movie. And I have some memories of going to see it in theaters. My grandma, who passed away, and she really loved a couple of the songs in this. So I always liked this movie. And Robert Duvall also shows up. My next one is 149, and one that I skipped class for a few times to go see, if you can believe it, Gran Torino by Clint Eastwood. This movie is a rare movie where Clint Eastwood plays basically a racist and grumpy man who finds peace in the neighbor who he warms up to and finally decides to show a little soft side and defend his neighborhood and his car in Gran Torino.
That's a good one.
Also directs.
Yeah.
It is good. 148 is Robin Williams. Good Morning Vietnam. Not only could Robin Williams play a comedy, and he goes full-blown Robin Williams here by improvising most of the scenes, it also becomes a drama. It's a Vietnam drama at times, so it's a very touching performance here and a great movie filled with some awesome songs from the 60s and 70s. Really enjoy this movie. 147 is one that you had earlier. I think last episode possibly. Misery.
Mm-hmm.
James Caan plays an author who is kidnapped by a superfan played by Kathy Bates. And it's a small, dramatic thriller that I think is highly effective. Really enjoyed this one. I enjoyed them all, guys.
Well, yeah.
Why would they be on the list, right? So,
yeah.
146, Goodfellas. Scorsese's gangster epic. Love the first two acts of this film. Not a big fan of the final act. I know it's based on a true story. Whenever Joe Pesci dies, I kind of loses a little bit. So, but anyways, it's still a great film, and that Warner is always a classic. And all right, so that's my first five. What do you have, Tom?
All right, my number 150 is The Innocents, 1961. An adaptation of The Turn of the Screw by Henry James, the story of a governess haunted by ghosts. I love how they present the ghosts with fog and how they appear or just sit in scenes. I also appreciate that they kept the novel's downer ending. Number 149 is one that I know that you love. Anna the Apocalypse. Anna is dealing with wanting to take a gap year and the recent death of her mother when the zombie apocalypse begins, a Scottish Christmas zombie musical. I just love this movie, a Christmas favorite. Dan doesn't like the movie. That was a joke.
I like musicals. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to try it again someday. Yeah. Number 148 is Don't Look Now. Nicholas Rogue adapts Daphne du Maurier in stylish fashion. Donald Sutherland and Julie Christie are in Venice following the death of their daughter. Christie falls in with a psychic who claims to see their daughter's ghost, while Donald starts seeing a little girl in a red raincoat under the canals and believes it is the ghost of their daughter. Atmospheric and beautiful, moving with a shocking ending, this is a well-made and realistic haunted house movie as The Exorcist.
Wow.
Yeah. No, this one's really good. I have one more Nicholas Rogue movie on here. Okay. Number 147 is Touch of Evil, Recreated Director's Cut. Orson Welles directs and stars as a corrupt cop on the Texas-Mexico border. Charlton Heston plays a Mexican officer investigating a bomb placed in the trunk of a car that crossed the border before exploding. A dark and feeling film noir, one of my favorites. I've not actually seen the other cuts of this film, but I always go back to the recreated director's cut. So,
yeah, that's Orson's intended vision.
Yeah, exactly. And like, we don't have that on a lot of his films. I mean, like, a lot of them were just censored. Like The Lady from Shanghai, The Magnificent Ambersons. We don't have his version of the movie. It's we just have what the studio put out.
Yeah, studio interference. That's why he left Hollywood.
Yeah, but this is the complete list of edits that Orson left behind that they used to recreate the director's
cut. That's the memo. Wow.
Yeah. So I give him props.
Yeah, I have all three cuts, and I have the Kino 4K, but doesn't include the memo. Wow. It shows it on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's interesting. But it doesn't.
You know, I haven't read the whole thing because, like, it is just essentially a series of, like, here's what I want out of this scene.
Yeah.
But it is interesting flipping through because it is Orson Welles saying it. So, like, it's interesting. I like it. I'm going to guess you have this one higher, but so my 146 is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which is part of my The Man with No Name collection. Sergio Leone's quintessential Western starring Clint Eastwood as the man with no name. He and two others are on the hunt for a treasure buried in a grave and are willing to cross each other to get it. Epic, suspenseful, with a wonderful Ennio Morricone score, this film captures the best of the spaghetti Westerns have to offer.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, surely I think that's the best spaghetti Western, like, hands down. I don't think there's, like, even, it's, like, even close. I mean, there's some other really good films, don't get me wrong, but I just think The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is the perfect spaghetti Western.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, and I'm differentiating that from, like, other Westerns. I think you could make an argument for, like, you know, other Westerns being better if you wanted to, but specifically the Italian Westerns.
Yeah, it's its own genre or subgenre.
Yeah.
Good.
So, yeah.
All right, my 145 is a comedy classic, the original Nutty Professor by Jerry Lee Lewis. He plays a bumbling professor who becomes of this formula that makes him more attractive and turns him into Buddy Love, where he falls for Stella Stevens. And at first it was kind of awkward because I thought it was high school, but it turns out it's college, so I was okay with it. And yeah, it's a very colorful film, very much of its time from the 60s, and slapstick humor that Jerry Lee Lewis is famous for. He also directed.
Oh, yeah.
144 is Rear Window, my favorite Hitchcock film. Love this movie. It's got some great cast. James Stewart leads the cast, and it's just such a suspense-driven mystery. This guy is basically house-ridden, and he figures out this murder. And it's the way that Hitchcock lays out the clues and suspense, just masterful. 143 is Smokey and the Bandit. Burt Reynolds has a lot of fun in this one as the bandit. He is just, you know, basically it's a high-speed chase a la Mad Max Fury Road, and there's a lot of interesting car stunts in here, And Sally Field shows up as a bride who left her wedding. So there's a lot of comedy too. So I just thought it was a great 70s flick that I saw, you know, later on, and probably 5 years ago was the first time I saw it after Burt Reynolds died. They were doing a showing and I went and saw it. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Next one, 142, is based on a true story. Ron Howard directs Apollo 13 with Tom Hanks at the helm here, Bill Paxton, Kevin Bacon, Gary Sinise, Ed Harris, loaded cast. The true story about Apollo 13. They were on a mission to the moon, but they had a problem. Houston, you have a problem, and they had to figure out a way to get back home safely, alive. And so, yeah, it's just really, really great true story here by Ron Howard. And speaking of Tom Hanks, 141. I think this one's dropped quite a bit on my list from the one we did 8 years ago or whatever, whenever that was. Forrest Gump. Still really like this film. I think it's one that I grew up on. Really enjoyed Tom Hanks' performance and all of the, I guess, satires and historical references in here. Like John Lennon shows up. You know, we have JFK. We have, and then you have the love story, which is kind of one-sided. I feel sorry for Forrest. He's chasing after Jenny, and she gives in to him and has like a one-night stand and gets pregnant and leaves him again. So it's just like, all right, Forrest, you've done all this amazing stuff. You deserve better. And but yeah, still a great movie by Robert Zemeckis.
She's going through some stuff.
That's true. That's true. All right, back to you. Okay. I think, cool. Right?
Sorry, I always get like lost in your list, and then I'm like, oh, right, I gotta go.
That's okay.
Okay. My 145 is The Changeling, 1980. Following the death of his wife and daughter, George C. Scott moves into a large, crumbling house haunted by the ghost of a murdered child. Solving the child's murder gives Scott closure on his own tragedy. A beautiful yet scary film, well-paced, well-executed, and well-acted, Scott brings incredible pathos to the role. This is, like, honestly, like, this is one of my favorite George C. Scott, like, roles, too. Like, I don't have Patton on here, but like I have this one. I love what he does with this. Like
I haven't seen that one.
They put out a 4K. This is a Severin. I get Severin confused with like Vinegar Syndrome, but they put out a 4K. I have not gotten that yet, but I already had the Blu-ray, so I was like, all right.
It's a great cover.
Yeah. No, it's a great cover. I think yeah, the inside is like red. Yeah. I do. They didn't restore the opening credits when they did it. Some of the like Severin and Vinegar Syndrome sometimes do that where they don't like restore the opening credits. So I was a little disappointed with that because like there's a noticeable drop in quality for those, which is weird because like there's picture in it. So like you think like I understand not doing it if there's no picture. You know, like, but when there's picture, I'm like, why are you, whatever. I mean, like, it's a small gripe, but yeah. Okay. Then number 144 is Amadeus. Oh, yeah. Milos Forman brings the Broadway play to the screen. F. Murray Abraham plays Salieri, secret rival to Mozart, who undermines him at every turn. Vividly depicting the court/opera intrigues in 17th century Vienna, is a fantastic film about artistic jealousy and bitter, simpering hatred.
Yeah, I finally saw that film last year.
It's good. It was
the first time, the director's cut.
So. Yeah. Well, I don't like that was the only one that's on here, so I haven't actually seen the theatrical cut. I did read up online the changes, and so I guess the scene where he intends to blackmail Mrs. Mozart for sex is not in the theatrical cut, and I'm just kind of like, he was a piece of shit before this. Like, this doesn't really change my opinion of him that much. I get why some people would be like, oh, that's a step too far if you didn't see that the first time, but
yeah, he's still a creep.
I mean, like, I have only seen this version, so I can't really like put myself in the headspace of someone who saw the theatrical version and then saw that added scene and was shocked by it. I can understand like why you would be. But for me, I was just like, oh, well, he's an asshole. Like, I mean, like, he's fascinating to watch. Don't get me wrong, but he is an asshole through and through the entire time. So like that, you know, doesn't change anything much for me.
Right.
Okay. My 143 is Brawl in Cell Block 99. Vince Vaughn is a good man who turns to crime, and his goodness in crime lands him in jail. Once there, he is told he must commit an assassination in a high-security prison, or else his pregnant wife will be killed. Intense and physically visceral, Vaughn transforms into the role, unleashing brutal strength upon everyone who gets in his way. Yeah. And I like this director. What's his name? S. Craig Zahler. He's made three movies. Bone Tomahawk was the first one. This was number two. And then the third one was Dragged Across Concrete. This is my favorite of the three. But the other two are really good too, especially Dragged Across Concrete. Yeah. Bone Tomahawk may grow on me. I think it's okay. Number 142. Apocalypse Now, the final cut. Quietly going mad in Saigon, Martin Sheen is tasked with going out into the wilderness of Vietnam to kill a rogue U.S. commander, Colonel Kurtz, who has set himself up as a cult leader. Francis Ford Coppola's Mad River Journey is a feast for the senses and a nightmare for the imagination. Marlon Brando gives an unsettling turn as the mad Colonel Kurtz.
Well said.
Yeah, I like that one a lot.
Mad River Epic, or whatever you said.
Oh, well, yeah, it's a hallucinary film. It is. I mean, it is. Like, and the I think the final cut just kind of adds to that. Like, I feel like the theatrical cut and the final cut are very, like, weird and crazy. The redux, the pacing is so off. The movie just comes to a grinding halt right in the middle when they go to the French plantation. The final cut is good because it, like, kind of incorporates those scenes, but they don't stop the movie. They just add what they're meant to add, and then they move on. Mm-hmm. And I think that he did a really good job with that one. The Redux, I can't watch. I can't get through it. But the final cut, I think, is really well done. And then number 141 is Brazil. Terry Gilliam's sci-fi dystopian masterpiece stars Jonathan Pryce as a low-level bureaucrat caught up in an attempt to capture an illegal AC repairman played by Robert De Niro, instigated by a typo. Surreal and hilarious, yet pessimistic. Wow, what a movie. Catherine Helmond of Soap's role as Price's mother, who is addicted to plastic surgery, is darkly hilarious. This is my first time seeing her outside of Soap, so I was like real excited when she showed up. Well, she's so funny on Soap. Have you heard of Soap?
I have. Billy Crystal.
Yeah, I love that show. He's not even like the main character, but he was like one of the main characters.
Yeah, I heard about it in History of Television, that class.
Yeah, he's the first openly gay character on television.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I guess I wasn't paying attention that closely.
They treat him with like a lot of pathos. So it's funny too. Like they have conversations where they're explaining being gay to like other characters, and then they react, and their reactions are just really funny. So like they're explaining to Catherine Helmond, who plays She's Billy Crystal's aunt on the show, and she's an idiot. Like that's her entire character. She's an idiot. She has no idea what's going on. Although they do make a really good, like every so often when she realizes someone is like being a dick to her, like her husband is cheating on her. Mm-hmm. They really have like a good pathos moment, but she they have this conversation where they're talking about where he says Plato is gay, like the Greek scholar. Yeah. And she takes a second and then she says, Mickey Mouse had a gay dog.
Nice. That's funny. Okay. All right. 140.
Huh? You got to go on with your list. Took a tangent.
That's all good, man. 140 is James Mangold directed Ford vs. Ferrari. I'm sorry, Matt Damon and Christian Bale. Really, I love the story here. It's based on a true story set in the 1966 and the Le Mans race. Great performances here by Matt Damon and Christian Bale, and strong direction by James Mangold. I always love his films.
Oh, yeah.
Next one, 139, is Glory, starring Matthew Broderick, Denzel Washington, Morgan Freeman. This is about the first black regiment for the North in Civil War. It's a very powerful film and important film, I believe, that still holds up today. James Horner's score is amazing, and the direction by Edward Zwick is, I mean, it's just above and beyond. It's one that I've seen it. I saw it in middle school the first time in a history class. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. All right, 138 is It Happened One Night, starring Clark Gable and Claudette Colbert. This is a slapstick comedy, romantic comedy that still holds up today. I think it's a highly charming film, especially on this new 4K release from the Sony collection. Really enjoyed it. There's the old artwork. So
I like the old artwork.
I do too. Yeah. 137, True Grit, the remake of the Coen brothers. I actually prefer this a lot more to John Wayne's original.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic story. I think it's more true to the book. I haven't read the book, but I've heard that they went more true to the novel. And just fantastic performances here. Haley Steinfeld came out here and put yourself on the map as an actor. And Jeff Bridges, Matt Damon, Josh Brolin are in here. And typical Coen brothers wit here. And cinematography is just fantastic. 136 is Before Sunrise. Richard Linklater directs Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. In the first movie, where two strangers meet on a train and spend the night together before sunrise, of course, and then they have to part. So it's just a nice little slice of life movie. Sort of like they have some interesting conversations about sexism, feminism, and where they are in life. And it's just, you can feel the bond between the two of them. Then they have to part. So it's kind of like a little romantic, little comedy, a little bit of everything. One that I try to watch every Valentine's Day.
You had one of the other ones on there already. Was it Before Midnight?
Did I? I might have.
Sorry?
I don't remember. I don't remember that, but...
I thought so, but maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe. I'm scrolling now. I don't see any. I know they're on here.
Oh yeah, I assume you had all three of them on there.
Oh gosh. No, I don't. I think I started with the original.
Oh, okay, cool. All right. Okay, cool. So my 140 is The Fly, 1986. David Cronenberg's remake of the 50s film finds Jeff Goldblum degenerating into a half fly, half man after a mistake with his teleportation pod. Cronenberg's most mainstream body horror movie emphasizes the tragedy of Goldblum's lost humanity. I wrote these out on paper, so sometimes... Sometimes I can't read my own writing. And also, I did this like a month ago.
Did great. Sounded great.
Hell yeah.
Good pick.
139 is Drive. Ryan Gosling stars in Nicholas Winding Refn's crime drama As a stuntman who moonlights as a getaway driver, the original music becomes the film's heartbeat as the driver's tragedy unfolds. Beautifully made, simply acted, the film almost feels like the driver's dreams of his life as he dies. Spoilers.
You said it feels like it's a dream?
Yeah, almost in a way. Like, feels kind of dreamy, right?
That's interesting. Yeah, it's an interesting way to look at it, yeah.
I don't know. That's what I was thinking of the last time we watched it. I don't think I said that out loud. But, okay. And then number 138 is The Death of Stalin. Armando Iannucci's creator Veep brings his political comedy stylings to the power struggle among Stalin's yes men following the dictator's death. Hilarious, dark, intricately paced and plotted, a delight of a movie that ends with a main character being burned alive.
Nice.
Okay. Number 137 is Moonlight. Told across 3 points in a young man's life, following him from poverty to post-prison life as he struggles with his mother's drug addiction, bullying, and his own sexuality. Naomi Harris and Mahershala Ali give tremendous supporting performances. Barry Jenkins' direction is first class.
Agreed.
Yeah. Number 136, The Black Phone. Scott Derrickson adapts the short story by Joe Hill. A young boy is kidnapped by a pedophilic murderer played by Ethan Hawke, but receives aid from the ghosts of this previously murdered boys who can communicate him via an unplugged phone in the basement dungeon. Great child acting by the two leads, a wonderful recreation of the 1970s, and a triumphant finale.
Cool. All right. Well done. I have 135. Coming in at 135 is Five Easy Pieces, starring Jack Nicholson, directed by Bob Ralphson, who directed him several times over the years. It's a very much a I don't want to ruin the twist, but there's a nice twist if you stay with the movie. It's kind of a slow-paced movie, but if you stick with it, you figure out why Nicholson's character is the way he is. And a fantastic reveal. Next one is 134. My favorite Argento, Suspiria. Haunting score, amazing cinematography and suspense. Just a beautiful giallo. Really enjoyed it. Really brief. But 133. Shrek, hey now, you're an all-star. This is a great movie. I still think it's hilarious. And the animation's a little dated, but I really have a good time with this fantasy. I guess it's almost a parody of like...
It's a parody.
Yeah, yeah. I would say
it's mean, nice. There was some visceral aimed at Disney for that one.
That's true. I definitely can see it. And yeah, it's a great time. Mike Myers, Eddie Murphy, Cameron Diaz lead the John Lithgow, Farquaad. I can't forget him. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Next one is a classic from my childhood. Jim Carrey, The Mask. Mm-hmm. From Zero to Hero. I always wanted to be this guy. Put the mask on and you become somebody. But it's based on a comic book. A lot of fun. And Cameron Diaz's first film. Number 131 is Casino. Yes, I put it before. I put it ahead of Goodfellas. Really enjoy this movie. It becomes like this battle for Vegas between De Niro and Pesci that I love, and Sharon Stone's in the middle. Scorsese just directs his ass off in this film, and I love the way that it begins with the car explosion and then go into the credits. It's a fantastic movie. And a way better ending than Goodfellas.
Nice.
That's just my opinion. That's controversial, but
I only have one Scorsese gangster movie on my list, and it's The Irishman.
Wow, I think I have all four. But...
Yeah, No, I mean, that's fair. I considered putting all four, but I ended up only putting the Irishman. So. Okay, cool.
It's hard. These lists are hard.
They are, because you have so much you want to include that you just kind of really can't. Even though I cheated and I included a lot that you couldn't.
You could just be like, yeah, Irishman and all the others.
I had that as one slot at one point, but then at some point I went through and I was like, you know what? Like a lot of these, what I'm going to do is just like, if I really mean one movie and I'm just including others, I'm going to cut the others and just do the one movie.
Now, would you include Mean Streets in there? Make it like five crime films?
I haven't seen Mean Streaks, no. So I don't know.
I almost put Mean Streets on here, but I didn't.
I'll have to see it at some point. It's I do want it. Yeah. Okay.
I have it.
This next one, I had a lot of scratching out, so hopefully I can read it pretty well. But my 135 is Knights of Cabrilla, La Dolce Vita, 8.5, and Juliet of the Spirits. Four films by Federico Fellini that tell the story of him cheating on his wife, Juliet Massana. Massana stars as Cabrilla in Knights of Cabrilla. She is a prostitute who everyone inadvertently is extremely rude to, much like Fellini himself. La Dolce Vita stars Marcello Mastroianni as a paparazzi reporter cheating on his fiance, who has become caught up in the glitz and glamour of the beautiful people. Marcello then stars in 8.5 as another Fellini insert who reminisces about cheating on his wife and tries to figure out what his next movie should be. Juliet of the Spirits finds Messina starring as a woman with a cheating husband. These four films tell the story of Fellini and Mancini. The behind-the-scenes story is making their way into the art. All are brilliant films and surprisingly introspective of Fellini's own compulsions and shortcomings.
Well said. You got through it. That's a common theme, though.
Yeah, and it's whenever I watch it, I'm just like, I cannot believe you guys are like talking about this, and like she's fucking in them, you know? Like, it's not even like she's just right there. okay.
No, sorry.
Number 134 is Midsommar. Ari Aster's quasi-remake of The Wicker Man follows a group of college students lured to an isolated village to witness a traditional Midsommar ritual. Spooky, even though the film mostly takes place in broad daylight, Aster does not hold back on the brutality or the just soft enough penis. Just soft enough to be rated R penis. You heard about that, right?
No.
They had to Okay, so like the scene where he runs around like naked for like a minute, they had to reshoot that because they were going to get an NC-17 initially because his penis was too hard.
Really? I didn't know that mattered. Wow.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm sure it got put in place to avoid having porn be rated R. I'm going to guess that that's where that came from. Now, I don't feel like it's such a, like, I mean, like, I don't know. In Europe, they're doing shit like that all the time. Like, Lars von Trier shows, like, full-on penetration in his movies, and it's just sort of there. And even though I'm not a huge fan of his movies, I wouldn't consider them porn. Like, you know, they're definitely have artistic merit. So I think we could probably re-examine that ruling at some point. But yeah, in order to not have the movie be NC-17, they had to reshoot with a softer cock.
That would be an interesting conversation.
Yeah, no. It's like, okay, you're too hard.
Imagine a guy with a billboard putting at different levels. Anyways. But
you can only be this hard.
this is the cutoff. Like, come on, that's ridiculous.
No, yeah, it's a little ridiculous. Okay, number 133 is Carnival of Souls, 1962. Yeah, you had this like last week, I think.
Mm-hmm.
A low-budget film made in Lawrence, Kansas, a young woman survives a car crash and is haunted by specters in an abandoned carnival. Simple yet haunting, a deliciously spooky ghost story. I was telling Vinny, I was like, I kind of have a lot of 60s horror movies like right in a row, but number 132 is The Haunting, 1963. Robert Wise adapts The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson. A young woman is invited to take part in a psychic investigation of a haunted house. Psychologically terrifying and inspiration for the Disney ride, The Haunted Mansion, just a very well done story. That's one of my favorite books, so I was glad that they did a good job with that one. And then number 131 is Spirited Away. Hayao Miyazaki and Studio Ghibli present Spirited Away, the story of a young girl who wanders into a world of spirits and witches after her parents turn into pigs. Beautifully animated, whimsical yet dark, a wonder.
Nice. Okay, 130 is one that I didn't like when I first watched it, like, at all. And I was like, oh, Bill Murray is up for an Oscar for this? Why is he up for this? And then, you know, years go by and it grows on you. That is Lost in Translation, where Bill Murray plays this celebrity and befriends a young woman, played by Scarlett Johansson, who's in an unhappy marriage or unhappy relationship. And they kind of take to the cities and they're in Japan and they just go around and mess around, do karaoke. And Coppola does a great job. Really, she directs the heck out of it. And she does a great job capturing like the atmosphere and the loneliness that these characters have, and leads to this interesting ending where you're not sure what Bill Murray told her and stuff like that. But it's just one of those movies that grows on you, sticks with you. My next one is 129, the one that started it all, Iron Man. Started the MCU, Robert Downey Jr., there's the MySpace reference, Jon Favreau directs, which I think really got his career going as a director. I mean, he's always good as with swingers, but this really propelled him, you know, in good company with Disney. And yeah, so this started out the MCU as we know it, and just a great fun film. And Jeff Bridges plays a great villain.
Yeah.
And 128, the one that ended it all 10 years later, Endgame. Fantastic experience. It ties everything together as far as like the first, I guess, the Infinity Saga, as they're calling it, ties it all together with a bow, and great performances here. I think Robert Downey Jr. should have been nominated for supporting actor. It was quite the experience in theaters. 127 is Taxi Driver. Completely change of tone here. Very dark film. And sticks with you for sure. Jodie Foster is amazing in this as a prostitute who becomes friends with De Niro's character. One of the darker scenes here is when Sybil Shepherd is asked by De Niro to go on a date, and he takes her to a porno theater, and he thinks that's normal. And I always, for some reason, I get a laugh out of that, but it's disturbing too. But it's a crazy movie that. It's just one of the Scorsese's darkest films.
Yeah.
126, speaking of dark characters, Chinatown by Roman Polanski. Really enjoy this film. I think it's still influential as far as the filmmaking. Polanski directs the heck a hell out of it. So it's a great noir. I don't want to call it modern noir, but it's a great noir from the 70s. Jack Nicholson is great here as Geddes, and Faye Dunaway is just as good too. So it's just a great, great movie, and Polanski is even in the film. So,
oh yeah, he cuts Jack Nicholson's nose.
Right, exactly. All right, that's the end of my list for this episode.
Cool. Wait, really? 1, 2, 3.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're right. I just have like. The next few have multiple movies in the songs. Nice. Three out of the five do. So that's why I was confused. Okay. So my number 130 is Curse of Frankenstein, 1957, Horror of Dracula, 1958, and The Mummy, 1959. So
these Monster are, Bundle.
Yeah. A trilogy of monster movies from Terrence Fisher and Hammer Horror, starring Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing. What did I say there? Innovative reworkings of their source material, replacing the elegance of the Universal monster movies with lurid color and camp. Very fun 50s monster movies. So, yeah, like I was going to originally just do Horror of Dracula because I think I do like this one the best of the three. But I think if you kind of like look at the three of them as a whole, they kind of they came out very close together. They're doing very similar things with the source material. They're all like playing with it a little bit. And it's the same lead, same director. So I was like, yeah, I think I'll include them all. But Horror of Dracula is the one that I discovered when I was little. So mm-hmm. I have a greater connection with that one. The other two I discovered as an adult. And so, like, I do enjoy them a lot, and I think they're probably just as good as Horror of Dracula. Yeah. But, like, I don't have quite the same attachment just because I didn't watch them when I was little. But I watched Horror of Dracula, like, on repeat. That was one of my favorites. Okay. So, turn to page. Number 129 is Galaxy Quest. And Mystery Men. These are joined in the heads of me and my parents. They came out around the same time when we watched them both in the same night. Galaxy Quest is a spoof of Star Trek in which a group of TV actors are mistaken for their on-screen characters by a group of desperate aliens. Mystery Men is a spoof of the superhero genre in which a group of non-superpowered heroes must save their city's captured powered superhero with disastrous results.
Yeah, that's a good little feature.
Yeah, well, and like Mystery Men didn't do well at the box office, whereas Galaxy Quest did. Always was baffling to me because I think they're of like pretty similar quality. It's just there weren't a lot of superhero movies at the time when Mystery Men came out, and like Mystery Men is a spoof of superhero movies, so like it has aged very well because like now we have so many superhero movies.
And Kenny O'Lover put out a 4K.
They did. I have considered getting that, but I'm like, you have the Blu-ray. Do you really need it? And I'm like, maybe. Yes. Okay. My 128 is Fanny and Alexander, the miniseries cut. Ingmar Bergman's semi-autobiographical Marvel follows siblings Fanny and Alexander through joys and hardships in turn-of-the-century Sweden. Just a beautiful film, gorgeous cinematography and set design, wonderfully drawn characters and situations, and powerful emotions and flights of fancy. An incredible film. The miniseries cut allows us to see more of Alexander's childhood imaginings and has a slower, more realistic pace that lets us get to know the family better. So the theatrical version is like 3 hours. The television miniseries is 320 minutes. So,
wow. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but it, the first episode, is very, it's set at Christmas and it is the most nostalgic Christmassy. I put it on in the background at our, family game night this Christmas. And yeah, the family, like I had several people asking me, what is this movie? I really want to like watch the rest of it.
Cool. That's great.
So the number 127 is Scooby-Doo 2002 and Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed.
Heck yeah.
James Gunn written, starring Matthew Lillard, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Freddie Prinze Jr., and Linda Cardellini. Wow, what fun live-action Scooby hijinks. Perfectly captures the spirit of the animated show for the big screen. Silly, carefree. I love the spooky island setting of the first film, and I love that we get to see some of the classic monsters in the second film. So, yeah, these are really fun. I enjoy the hell out of them. I recognize they might not be the best movies, but like, I feel like they really are well-done Scooby movies, and like Scooby is very formulaic and not like...
Yeah,
I love Scooby-Doo, but it's not like good in a certain sense of the word. Like they're just like really goofy and like only make sense if like you squint. Other than that, they're just, you know, like they're a talking dog. I mean, like I don't actually know the production history, but I feel like somebody must have been high to come up with that.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
And then 126 is a James Mangold is Logan. James Mangold directs Hugh Jackman as Wolverine and Patrick Stewart as Professor X in what was intended to be their last outing as those characters, bringing a dark and brutal Western vibe to the X-Men comic book characters. This is my favorite of those films, and I appreciate that Fox let them go so dark. So that's mine for this episode.
Well done. I think we put out some great movies on this episode.
Oh, yeah.
25, a little bit of stuff that we've already covered, but we had a lot of variety. And guys out there, let us know below your thoughts of this episode, episode 5 of the Top 250. And we'll be back with episode 6 next week. So be sure to subscribe and like and comment. And peace out, guys.